Thank you for supporting WBEZ. You keep public media public. December gifts are among the most important because they set the tone for our reporting in 2026. Next year, we're doubling down on bringing you stories that arm you with the facts. This journalism relies on everyone contributing what they can. Join them today at wbez.org/donate.
This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work Policy and Practice at the University of Chicago. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration prepares professionals to address today's most pressing challenges and offers flexible options with part-time and evening classes to support busy adults balancing complex schedules. Inspire change, shape the future at crownschool.uchicago.edu/social work.
I'm Sasha Ann Simons, and this is Reset. I want you to picture Chicago's lakefront. Now imagine yourself on the beach, the sand between your toes. Up and down Lake Michigan's shoreline for nearly 30 miles, we have the opportunity to swim and walk and bike in park after park. In Chicago, this is public land, not private property. And the local conservation group Openlands says it's time to strengthen the laws that protect the lakefront to ensure it stays accessible to all. Openlands has a new report that outlines the history of the lakefront, the gaps in current protections, and a vision for the future. To learn more, we were joined by Emily Reiswig, Vice President of Conservation and Policy for Openlands, Michael Davidson, President and CEO of Openlands, and Karen Weigert, Reset Sustainability Contributor. Why is Lake Michigan such an asset? What does having access to the lake mean for you personally? Emily kicked it off.
Well, as a bike user myself, the miles and miles of trails, the trail system on the lakefront is about 50 miles, is so incredibly important for residents of the city of Chicago to get out and recreate, but also just rest. You know, we live in a bustling city, and to have that open space where you can look out on the lake, mm-hmm. and just as you set up for us, just take a moment of calm and respite is so vitally important. It's the same for wildlife. You know, Chicago is on a migratory flyway. It's the Mississippi Flyway, one of North America's major migration routes. And every spring and fall, millions of birds fly through our city and rely on our shores as resting place. And then finally, Lake Michigan is an incredible natural resource that yes. we have to protect. And the lakefront is our kind of first line of defense in ensuring that our freshwater source, one of the largest in the world, is protected.
Yeah, absolutely. Michael, what comes to mind for you?
Well, I like that you're starting with this question. I think it's the most important question.
It is.
I mean, as Chicagoans, we need to know how fortunate we are to have this one-of-a-kind lakefront. And what's at stake, Sasha, when we take it for granted? So I think of three things. I think of physical uniqueness. That's its most obvious asset. You know, we've got some numbers in the report. The longest contiguous, or one of the longest contiguous urban waterfronts in the world, about 25, 27 miles. Mm-hmm. 30,000 daily users during the summer months, over 50 miles of trails and footpaths, 26 beaches. How many urban cities have beaches like ours?
Yeah.
And all of this is juxtaposed against one of the world's most iconic skylines. So in terms of sense of place, you can't beat it. But I think intention is also a lakefront asset, because intention begets passion and civic pride. And almost since the founding of our city, residents and civic leaders have recognized the value of the public lakefront. So almost 200 yeah. years ago, since Chicago was founded, there's been this kind of hard-fought effort to keep the lakefront a beautiful public amenity. And today, cities around the world are spending millions, if not billions, trying to retrofit
yeah.
their industrial waterfronts for recreation in a post-industrial economy. And in Chicago, we don't have to do that here. And the third thing that I think is super important for a city like Chicago, the economic value of our lakefront. And it may sound counterintuitive coming from a conservation organization, but Openlands would strongly argue that Chicago's economic success, so our diverse economy, our lakeside universities, the University of Chicago, Loyola, Northwestern, our global city status, and certainly our tourism are because we've got this beautiful lakefront. So the irony here is that Chicago's economic place in the world is because we haven't handed over our lakefront to commercial interests.
I mean, who else wants to just head over to the lake now after hearing Michael break that down? Karen, what does this access mean for you personally?
Well, I want to live in the city they just described.
Right.
When you think about it, this open, free, public lakefront runs from north to south. So it's truly for everyone. And it anchors the economy without a doubt. It anchors visitors when they come here. But more than anything, it anchors us to this place. And just even today, if you look at the lake, it's one color of blue. Tomorrow will be a slightly different color of blue. So it's ever changing, but always here. And it's just a part of the fabric of what it means to be a Chicagoan.
Yeah, you know, I grew up, as you know, Karen, in Toronto. And of course, so Lake Ontario was at my doorstep, if you will. But it wasn't the same. I loved Lake Ontario, still do. But Lake Michigan, I have to say, having done sort of both, it offers far more public beach access than we had in Toronto. I think there were two beaches that I could name off the top of my head that we would have access to and step on. But here, I was blown away at just that stretch along the shoreline and just how many beaches we can access here. So how would you say that Chicago's lakefront compares to some other cities like Toronto and others?
Well, admittedly, we're probably a little biased, but I think the data's on our side. It's actually completely unique. And that's one of the things when you live here, you don't get that context always.
Yeah.
If you go East Coast, you look at New York, look at a Boston, you go West Coast, look at a San Francisco, look at a Los Angeles, nobody has this much free, available shoreline real estate. They don't have the easy access to it.
And even the amenities on the beach. I mean, just the restaurants along the beach. Like, I just hadn't seen that before.
Yeah, it's absolutely one of a kind.
Yeah.
And to your point, the amenities range from everything from just a free beach that anyone can visit to world-class cultural institutions, educational institutions. You can get some food. You can see some nature. But it's all right there with no salt.
Mm-hmm. So what about strategies then to protect the lakefront as OpenLands is calling for folks to do?
Well, one thing that's really remarkable is when you look at the lakefront in Chicago, it hasn't always been this way. It's been this way for many, many decades. But if you go back in the history of the city, it took intention after intention to build the lakefront the way it is. Some of that's actually physical in that the lakefront moved. Like, we've actually built out Chicago. There's land that was created. And then with that physical and cultural effort, you then need legal underpinnings. And so there are now generations now of a lakefront protection ordinance and other efforts that keep the boundaries or try to keep the boundaries today. But it goes back to individuals trying to think about what the future of Chicago could be. How do they galvanize support for it? And then how do they put in place the policies and the procedures so that it extends for generations to come? And that's been an ever-growing process, and we're in the middle of it.
Mm. What kept our lakefront from getting super developed, Mike, and parceled out to private entities?
It's a great question, Sasha. And I like it because I think Chicagoans should know the complex, interesting, super interesting, and hard-fought history of their lakefront. And it begins with early sentiment. So as early as 1836, the maps of Chicago show a portion of the lakefront that is designated as, quote, open, clear, and free of any buildings. So the idea of a public lakefront was there almost from the start. And then the work of Daniel Burnham would broaden that sentiment after the turn of the century with kind of a literal plan for a lakefront, public lakefront with an expansive park system called the Plan of Chicago. But the first law protecting the lakefront was something called the Public Dedication Doctrine, which drew from that early idea of a forever open, clear, and free lakefront. And this was in the late 19th century. It was championed by Montgomery Ward, the retailer. It was designed to protect Grant Park and to keep Michigan Avenue views open to the lake. And that law, by the way, it stands today. But more importantly, the Public Dedication Doctrine created precedent for later, more powerful protections, including, and this is covered extensively in our report, the Public Trust Doctrine, which is a law under state jurisdiction, but upheld by the U.S. Supreme Court. And it says, this is so interesting, the public owns the lakebed. And when the lake bed is filled in, and by the way, that's a lot of Chicago's shoreline.
Right.
Whatever happens on this new land must provide a public good. And it's in the interpretation of public good that things get tricky. So over the decades, the courts have wavered in their interpretation of public good. And so while the public trust doctrine is a formidable protector of the lakefront, it's not a guarantee. And that's why in the early 1970s, and Karen referenced this, a coalition of organizations, including Open Lands, it was led by the Metropolitan Planning Council at the time, but Open Lands was a strong supporter, pushed for municipal protections for the lakefront. And that gave us the Lakefront Protection Ordinance in 1973. Now that ordinance is a city protection. And because it's more than 50 years old, there are problems with it. It needs some work. So the new Open Lands Lakefront Report acknowledges the full suite of protections for the lakefront, but focuses on strengthening the Lakefront Protection Ordinance because that's where, in Chicago, we have the most control.
Yeah. Why don't you piggyback off that, Emily, and talk more about how the current legal protections work and limitations, if
yeah,
there are any.
Of course. So as Mike said, Open Lands reviewed a number of legal protections. In addition to the public trust and dedication, there's also just regular city municipal zoning laws. There's federal laws like the Endangered Species Act protections for areas like Montrose Beach with the piping plovers. But we, as Mike said, felt really strongly that the Lakefront Protection Ordinance as a municipal law and a special jurisdiction over the entirety of the lakefront was the most powerful way to continue to protect the lakefront. In our analysis, we found that there's a lot of subjectivity in the process. The limitations are really around the lack of objectivity. So for example, the DPD commissioner is not required to conduct environmental impact studies for approval through the Chicago Plan Commission. There are no minimum standards for design or use that developments have to meet in order to go through the approval process for the Chicago Plan Commission,
okay,
the Zoning Committee, or City. And there's just a really short time frame for public engagement. So all of these create limitations for the public to be involved, for them to really understand what a development proposal means and how it creates precedent for future development along the lakefront. And Open Lands is really advocating for stronger protections around a few different things. We want to see environmental review mandated. It was part of the original ordinance in 1973 and was at some point in time taken out. We want that put back in the Lakefront Protection Ordinance.
Okay.
We also, like the Chicago Riverfront enjoys, want to see some design and use standards engaged. So minimum setbacks from the lake. We want to see bird safe windows like we saw at McCormick Place mm-hmm. East, and how much of a benefit that created.
Right.
And we want to see greater public debate. So expanding the notification requirements that the Chicago Plan Commission has to follow so that residents are more informed, they can be part of the conversation, and we don't have to continually get into these legal disputes after it goes through the LPO process mm-hmm. in the future.
Can I add one quick thing to that, Sasha?
Sure.
We also, one of our recommendations is a plan for the lakefront.
Mm-hmm.
You know, ideally ordinances should follow plans. It's in planning that you create a vision for the lakefront. We haven't had a plan for the lakefront for the entirety of the lakefront since 1972.
That's so hard to believe.
Mm-hmm.
And yet it's our greatest kind of civic and natural asset. And without a plan and an ordinance to kind of implement the plan, it becomes vulnerable. And it you know, it can be a death by a thousand cuts kind of situation, and that's what we want to avoid.
Yeah. Well, you know, you worked as the City of Chicago's first sustainability officer, Karen. What insight can you share for how this ordinance operates when there's a dispute over development, for instance?
Sure. I think, you know, in general, when we're looking at this, there are these layers that try to provide some guidance, and different entities and different people can have different views, and that has really played out, and you've seen it. If you go back into some of the more controversial and high-profile proposals that didn't happen, I think, you know, an example there would be the Lucas Museum, which was originally proposed right there on the lakefront, right below Soldier Field, and ended up getting a decent amount of support, certainly had mayoral support, ended up getting support backing the city and being able to make those decisions, you know, from a state process, but it was going into court.
Mm-hmm.
So it speaks to, you've got these different layers, but there's a lot of interpretation in there. And so that's an example where ultimately it was heading to court when the team decided to look at another city. And it ended up on the West Coast, actually not next to the water in the end. But that's an example where you had lots of different entities with different views, creating authorization within the control that they had. But then you see the butting up of heads in terms of this, what the city can do, what the state can do, and where the courts can go. But it does go back to this question of what's the end goal? Like, what's that shared vision and understanding of a process that would then keep the lakefront for Chicagoans and allow that longer-term view of what that will look like in the decades to come? A lot's changed since that Chicago plan. I think it's 1972.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They did a great job, actually, if you go back and look at it in terms of understanding multiple elements. But 50 years is a long time. And it's really interesting to think about how we could set this lakefront up for the next 50 years.
Emily, why do you think now's the time to strengthen the lakefront protection ordinance?
Yeah, well, I loved what Karen said, that, you know, lakefront protection, it's not a set it and forget it kind of thing. 50 years after this important legislation was passed, we are cyclically looking at development proposals, often large-scale development proposals, along public open space on the lakefront. We are not anti-development at Open Lands. We live in an urban city. We understand the need for smart planning and sustainability. But we should be thinking, as Mike said, about the vision for our lakefront. And when we are looking at a plan that's over 50 years old, that really the public didn't have access to any longer. It was not on the city's website. We had to go to the Chicago Public Library to find it.
It disappeared.
It disappeared. We really think that we need to be thinking holistically about the equity of the lakefront. There are still gaps along the lakefront where there is not public access, and really be thinking about these development proposals as, how are we creating benefit, public benefit for Chicago with any major development proposal along the lakefront? And we'd like to see more of that.
Yeah. You know, I thought it was interesting, Mike, that you said to one of our producers, one of the biggest threats to the lake is people taking it for granted.
Right.
I want you to say more on that.
Well, I think it's easy as a Chicago resident, even if you're a user of the lakefront, just to assume that that protection is guaranteed. I think most of
that
us.
That it's always going to be there.
That it's always going to be
there. It's
always
going to look the way it does. And
you know, most people understandably don't appreciate the role of planning and the role of municipal ordinance in protecting something.
I mean, when you put it that way.
Right. And then when some exciting new development comes along that looks pretty, and if you're, for example, if you're a Chicago Bears fan, I mean, of course, why wouldn't you be excited about that? Economic development is exciting.
And about the potential of a lakefront stadium?
Correct. And so I just don't think people are thinking long term. And I think it's very easy to just take for granted this incredible asset and not appreciate all that goes into protecting it and how unique it is in keeping it open, clear, and free.
Yeah.
Well, and I think the Park District has done an incredible job the last couple decades, especially in naturalizing parts of our lakefront and creating habitat for some of our wildlife. The bird sanctuaries that are along the lakefront, those too bring incredible economic benefit to the city of Chicago.
Sure.
And we really want to support some of those efforts.
How else do you want to work with the city?
Open Lands has a long history of working very constructively and collaboratively with the city. We've been around since 1963. We came out of the Welfare Council of Metropolitan Chicago, which is now United Way. And so our relationship with the city is strong and has always been strong. We were involved in the redesign of Museum Campus. We do a lot of work in the neighborhoods with the alders and with city departments. And so the first thing that we did was we let the city know that this report was coming out. So we sent, you know, we communicated with the Department of Planning and Development, with Commissioner Boatwright and Department of Environment, Commissioner Tovar. And we, of course, sent an email to our new Park District Superintendent, Carlos Ramirez-Rosa. And we let them know that this report was coming out. We gave them sort of a teaser on it. We were also very clear that this report is not anti-city at all. We have zero doubt that our friends and colleagues at the city also love the lakefront. They also love the lakefronts. And said, and we said, we've got a series of recommendations to strengthen, to tighten up the lakefront protection ordinance, and please keep an open mind and consider working with us. And our response was very positive. They were all eager to read it, and we're getting meetings on the calendar. And right now, they seem very open-minded about it. So we're hoping for a very collaborative, constructive relationship.
Sounds like the makings of a good start here. Remind us, before we go here, Emily, the public, how can they interact with the report? Is there a website?
Yeah, of course. Well, to learn more about the report, you can go to openlands.org/lakefront.
Okay.
There you can see a story map that has an executive summary of the report, as well as our policy agenda and what we're recommending. And finally, you can sign up to be notified for future action alerts as we meet with the city and learn more about how to move this forward.
Awesome. Emily Reiswig is Vice President of Conservation and Policy at Openlands. Michael Davidson is the President and CEO of Openlands. And Karen Weigert is Reset's Sustainability Contributor. Thank you all.
Thank you.
This episode of the Reset Podcast was produced by Linnea Dominic and edited by Dan Tucker. It was mixed by Ari Mejia. Reset wants to make sure you stay in the know and connected to what's going on in Chicago and beyond. To make sure you never miss an episode, hit subscribe wherever you listen or find us at wbez.org/reset. I'm Sasha Ann Simons. We'll meet again soon.
My name is Donald. I live on the southeast side of Chicago. I support WBEZ because of the balanced reporting and covering so much about an issue as opposed to just the few seconds that you may hear on most other news outlets. It matters to me to hear the story more completely